Hey, yo, back with you on The Leader. Dieter Kurtenbach hanging out until 10 p.m. Connor Letourneau covers the Golden State Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. You know him. You know his work. He joins us now to talk about all things Warriors and Lakers. First and foremost, Connor, how are you doing on this fine Tuesday evening?
I'm doing well, man. I can't complain. I'm excited to be writing about games that matter. You know, it's just a fun, refreshing break from the past, you know, year plus of writing about meaningless games or just nothing at all. So I'm enjoying it.
Okay, we're going to dive right in on that. I had a bunch of questions about the basketball game that does matter, but I gotta grab that psyche for a second. How crappy was it having to cover last year's 15-win Warriors on a day-in, day-out basis? Tell me the depths of depravity you went to make that interesting.
I will say that from my perspective, it wasn't as horrible as you would assume just because there were so many new guys. And one thing I enjoy doing on the beat is just introducing new players to readers. And so I had like a new profile on a new G League guy every week. And so anyone who follows my coverage closely knows that I really enjoy that. And so that was actually, that kept it somewhat interesting for me, but from a basketball standpoint, yeah, it was pretty brutal. And, you know, you have to keep in mind that, like, we're on the road with these guys. I'm in Milwaukee in late February fighting the frigid cold for a team that doesn't matter in any way. And so, and isn't even trying to win games. And so, you know, it's tough. But at the end of the day, we get paid a bit to write about basketball. So I really should not complain too much.
I'm with you. We're not complaining, but it is tough being around bad vibes all the time, no doubt, right?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, last season was kind of weird because it wasn't even like bad vibes. I would make the argument that it was actually better vibes than the previous season with Kevin Durant. It was just like, it was just nothingness. I mean, there were young guys that were excited to have an opportunity, but you knew none of it meant anything. I mean, when you have Eric Paschal just trying to beat guys one-on-one over and over just so you can get some points on the board, you know it doesn't mean anything. I mean, look where Eric Paschal is on the depth chart right now.
Yeah.
Not like he was a franchise building block or anything. He was just a guy that needed to score some points because they had no one else.
Well, they might need him tomorrow because I'm looking at this Lakers lineup and I'm thinking that they might be able to pull off what the Memphis Grizzlies didn't have the nerve to hold, which is just pound it in the post to Valanciunas, develop some foul trouble for some of the Warriors, quote-unquote, big men early in the game, and force them kind of deep into their bullpen with the guys that they don't want to use outside of the eight-man rotation. It's a big, broad question, but maybe we par it down here a little bit. How big of a concern is the Lakers' size to the Warriors?
To be honest, I don't think that it should be that much of a concern because I think that the Warriors' small ball style is going to give the Lakers just as much problems as the Lakers' size. The Lakers are going to win the rebounding battle. That's going to happen. But the Warriors have managed over this final 5 weeks or so of the season to win 15 of 20 games because they were able to make up for losing the rebounding battle in a lot of different ways. And, you know, the playoffs are all about throwing guys out there that you feel comfortable with in high-stakes situations. And the reality is, partly because of injuries, the Warriors only have eight guys that they feel comfortable playing in high-stakes situations. So even though I understand the thought process of throwing out, like, an Eric Paschal, maybe even a Jordan Bell, to contend with the size, I think they need to go all in on the small ball and try to use that to their advantage because, you know, even though they're going to lose the rebounding battle, I think playing Juan Toscano-Anderson 25, 28 minutes is going to do a lot more for you than divvying some of those minutes up and giving them to Paschal and Bell and some of those other guys.
No doubt about it. And it's not like anybody on that team is actually large. Like Looney is a mastodon compared to everybody else. At the same time, the Lakers can go with Anthony Davis at the five. And at some point, then the Warriors small ball just becomes talent v. talent on the court. And that's not a good position for the Warriors to be in. Where do you like the matchup for Golden State? You allude to, okay, small ball is going to give the Lakers some problems. And I can see it. There's no doubt that the Warriors probably not getting enough credit for what they've done over the last couple of weeks and the style that they play. But is there a matchup just on the surface that you like for the Warriors going into this contest?
I really like this guy named Steph Curry.
Yeah, I've heard of him. Tell me a little bit about him.
I think he could be pretty good tomorrow. the thing is, I don't love the Lakers' defensive options on Curry, especially since Schroeder is coming back from being out with health and safety protocols for a while. Yeah. I don't think he's totally got his win back. He was up and down in the couple games he's played since he came back. So if that's like your primary defender on Steph, I just don't love that as an option. I think Steph is really poised to go off for 40 plus tomorrow, which is what he's going to need to do for them to win.
Right.
But yeah, I don't think the Warriors obviously don't have an elite perimeter stopper to put on LeBron. They don't have Klay Thompson. They don't have Andre Iguodala. But I actually like Andrew Wiggins defensively on him better than what the Lakers have in terms of their options on Steph. And early in the season, when they played LeBron, Kelly Oubre had the majority of that matchup, but didn't do super well.
Right.
And so I actually don't think it's a huge loss that he's going to be out tomorrow. I actually think they should have gone all in on Wiggins. It's asking a lot of Wiggins tomorrow to match up defensively with LeBron and, oh, by the way, be a worthy number two option to Steph. But, you know, I actually think he's capable of it. He's done that time and time again this season. I think he can handle it.
Do you think it will be the Wiggins game? What does the Wiggins game look like in the box score? How many points does Andrew Wiggins have tomorrow if he has his game?
They need low 20s from him. They need like 22 on efficient shooting, kind of what he did against the Grizzlies.
Right.
And Steph, you know, going in the 40s. That's what they need.
When you think about his season on the whole, it's been really steady, right? But this is unquestionably, I'm talking about Wiggins here, sorry to just throw you into that. This is unquestionably an upgrade over how he has played in the past. I don't know if you can garner anything from the 10, 12, 11 games he played last year with the Warriors, but he is certainly a better player this year than he I think ever was with Minnesota. And it goes without saying that playing with Steph Curry and Draymond Green is likely to bring that out in you. At the same time, there were plenty of questions when he got traded here, and I think very valid ones, about if he had another gear, if he could be a winning player. I think he's proven to be a winning player. Do you think there's even more in the tank for him? Do you think that he has another level to get to? Because where he's at right now is good, but if he can go to another place, well, now we're talking about something special.
I mean, he's only 25. I mean, people
that is so hard to believe.
Yeah, I mean, people forget that because he's been in the league forever, because he came to the league when he was 19. But no, he definitely has another level. You know, I think he takes really good care of his body. The average NBA player, the heart of your prime, is 27. You know, that's getting pushed back more and more as guys get better at taking care of their bodies. So I think he's got a couple more levels to reach. But I think the biggest reason why he's been the best he's ever been this season is because this is just a perfect situation for him. And not just from a schematic standpoint, but from just a role standpoint. You know, this is a guy who I think really struggled with not just being a go-to option in Minnesota, but all the pressure and scrutiny and spotlight that comes along with that. This is a guy who is really low key. You know, he's the type of guy who wants to go in, put in his work, and then go home and hang out with his two young daughters. Like, that's just who he is. He doesn't like talking to media. He doesn't like all the extra stuff that goes along with being a superstar. And I think this is seriously an ideal situation for him in the sense that he gets paid like a max level player, yet he doesn't have the pressure that comes with being a max level player. You know, he can come in and be complimentary piece to one of the greatest players of all time and do the dirty work defensively. And I think most importantly, he's in an environment where the narrative around him is positive again, and he feels loved. You know, I think things got so toxic in Minnesota for him. It was hard to bring his best every day when all you're hearing is negativity. I mean, he's a human being. We all want to be liked. And that, I think, has been a huge factor for him.
What does this team look like? I don't want to push too far ahead, but the Warriors might not have that many more games to play. I might not have many more opportunities to talk to you on the air here while we still are kind of in the heat of the moment. With Wiggins establishing himself, and perhaps he's done enough with his trade value to where someone else might be interested, but the Warriors love him. I don't think that there's much action happening there. Oubre has been injured now for a minute. It seems as if, you know, outside of a little bit of a stretch in February, they play better without Oubre. I'm having a hard time seeing him on the team. You got the young guy coming in. Do you think that this team knows what its foundation is, or is this still a work in progress that just kind of came together this season at the end and maybe fooled some people into thinking that, hey, there's a foundation here?
It's an interesting question because I think that they know what their foundation is in terms of the guys that are already on the roster. Like, they know who from this team is going to be a piece going forward. And, you know, we've learned a couple of those things just in the past couple of months. Juan Toscano-Anderson definitely deserves a place in this team's long-term plans. I think he can be a legitimate seventh, eighth man on a winning team.
Yep.
Jordan Poole also definitely deserves a place in the long-term plans. Some people, Steve Kerr included, have said that he could be a sixth man. I'm not ready to say that yet, but I think he definitely has a lot of potential and deserves a spot. And then, of course, the main guys, you know, Steph, Draymond, Clay, Andrew Wiggins. And then it gets a little bit murkier after that, you know? What happens with James Wiseman, you know? He wasn't a great fit this season. He's only 20 years old, but he, you know, he might be one of your best options to go out and get, to dangle in a trade to go out and get an all-star caliber player. But the truth is, if we're being honest, there just aren't a lot of avenues and paths for the Warriors to get, like, a true difference maker, another true difference maker. The only path that I can really think about is if they package the top three protected pick from Minnesota, which is looking like it very well could fall into the 7-8 range.
Agreed.
You package that with James Wiseman, and then you try to orchestrate some sort of sign-and-trade with Oubre to make that the big contract filler. Because you don't want to give up Wiggins for the reasons we just talked about. And Oubre shouldn't really be in this team's long-term plans because he's not a great fit. So that's really the only pass. And then, like, is that enough? And do we even know who, like, that all-star caliber guy would be? And is he even a good fit? Like, there's just so many questions. And the reality is, they're in the same situation almost every other NBA team is, which is you just try to do the best you can, you know, with what you got. And they're going to go out there next season. Very well could be bringing Jordan Poole off the bench as their sixth man. And they're going to hope and pray that's enough to contend in the West.
Yep.
And it probably won't be. But that's where they're at.
The you just tried to do the best you can sounded like Bob Myers was saying it, man. It's just that we've heard him. And, you know, you're just trying your best, man. You just try to go out there and do your best. And I'm with them, right? This is the real NBA. The Warriors could not be, you know, the system is not set up. Especially when you lose a player like Kevin Durant, the system is not set up for you to be the Yankees. You can't just go out and buy whatever it is you want. There is a salary cap, which, by the way, the Warriors are dramatically over, like laughably over. I don't even know where Joe Lacob's getting all this money to pay these guys. So it's not like they can just artificially add in another superstar. There's a lot of mechanisms involved and it's a hot mess. Now, luckily for the Warriors, if you're right, and I think you are, they have their foundation. They know what they're about. They got 5-6 guys that they can trust moving forward when we have to include Kevon Looney in that.
I'm sorry. I forgot.
It's okay. It's important to me, but, you know, we'll move on. I'll give you that pass. If they have that base, crazy stuff is going to happen in the offseason. It always happens in the offseason, and the Warriors are in a much better spot to maybe take advantage, even as unlikely as it is to take advantage of all that craziness, because for the first time in a minute now, they have some stability around in San Francisco. That alone has to be encouraging. I want to swing this your way because it's something that had been kind of in the back of my head for a while. I wrote about it this afternoon. It feels as if Steve Kerr, and listen, we all really like Steve on a personal level, but we also have to be critical of him when he's not doing a good job. And he's very cool about understanding our role in this whole operation and being forthright. I mean, he admitted early in the season, middle of the season, I'm not doing the best job that I can do. I need to be better. I got to up my game. He has clearly upped his game. Clearly, it's Stephen Curry taking it to a whole new level. Draymond Green is playing out of his gourd. A lot of guys have done a lot of really good things, but if Steve Kerr deserved the criticism when the Warriors stunk, they really did stink for a good stretch of this season. Yeah. He also deserves some damn praise when they're arguably the best team in the NBA over the last 20 games. What have you seen from Kerr as this season has progressed? Because you're in those Zoom rooms every day. You're kind of picking up the vibes off of them. Just kind of walk me through this season and what you've picked up off of Steve, because this is a hell of a challenge for him. And he came out on the right end, and it was a little touch and go there for a minute.
I wrote this earlier in the season, but this was the most challenging season he's ever had, by far.
No doubt.
Because I think people forget that he had never coached at any level when he took over the Warriors. And he inherited this dynastic team, and not trying to take anything away from his coaching because he did what he needed to do.
Right.
The first five seasons he was with the Warriors, his job was managing ego, fostering a joyful locker room ethos, and guarding against complacency. That was his job.
Yep.
And he did that at a high level, but then last season – he's in a situation where suddenly Steph goes down and he doesn't really have to worry about winning. It's all about player development. Mm-hmm. That takes all the pressure off of him. And then this season, he's in the weird in-between spot that a lot of teams are in, where you have to try to, quote unquote, thread the needle, and you're trying to develop important young players, specifically James Wiseman, a guy who honestly does not fit well with Steph Curry, your most important player, while trying to win games. And it's a tough spot to be in as a coach, and he really struggled with it. Mm-hmm. And he would tell you that he struggled with it. Mm-hmm. I thought they handled James Wiseman's season horribly. The messaging was really mixed.
Yes.
He was not in a position put into a position to succeed. They finally started to kind of figure it out right before he got the knee injury. I think there were a lot of lessons learned for Steve during that entire process. And then, to be honest, as far as what he's done as a coach recently, I think he's benefited greatly from injuries, which I know sounds weird.
No, I'm with you. That makes perfect sense to me.
But the injuries forced him down a path that he honestly needed to be going down much sooner, which was you need to play to this team's strengths. This team's strengths are speed and versatility, and you need to lean all the way into that. And the injuries that happen to guys like James Wiseman and Kelly Oubre and Damian Lee, and Eric Paschal, it forced them down this path where they have to go all in on Juan Toscano-Anderson and Jordan Poole and Kent Bazemore. And those are the guys that they needed to be going all in sooner, because those are the guys that fit what they should be doing the best. They fit their best version of basketball the best. And it's all about getting guys out there. And I think it also clarified for Steve and for the rest of the organization the type of guys they need.
Right.
Because if you look at the guys these role guys that have really excelled lately, they're all high IQ guys who have a high level feel for the game and can see the floor at a high level.
Yes.
And that to me is James Wiseman's biggest issue is he does not have a great feel for the game, and I don't know if that suddenly gets developed.
Right.
Especially when you're missing the entire offseason. And that's why I question whether or not he should be a long-term answer in this organization. I would much rather roll with a guy like Juan Toscano-Anderson, honestly, if I'm the Warriors, even at center, as a 6'6" center, than James Wiseman, because he unlocks so many things that they're trying to do.
Right. Right. They have to play an entirely different game with Wiseman. And you try telling Steph and Draymond, hey, switch up what you've been doing at the highest level, you know, Hall of Fame careers, switch up what you're doing. Yeah. And so this 20-year-old who doesn't know what he's doing yet, and again, might never learn. He also might turn into a 10 times, you know, all-star. Who knows? I mean, he is truly a ball of clay at this juncture. And I don't know if there was any definition added to that ball of clay this past year. But yeah, you try telling two of the best players in the history of West Coast basketball, not just Warriors basketball, West Coast basketball. You guys change it up because James Wiseman's in town. That is a tough sell. And honestly, maybe Kerr deserves as much credit for just handling that and not going thermonuclear and saying, I can't do this. And not, you know, doing what Phil Jackson would have done and just gone to Montana. In Steve's case, go to San Diego and sticking through it. And yes, I'm with you 100%. Circumstances kind of forced his hand. But once that hand was given to him, he made the most of it. He played a good hand. And now we get this game on Wednesday night. What do you think goes down? You're high on the Warriors small ball versus the Lakers size. I got 100 Connor Letourneau dollars. Where are you putting it?
I understand why everyone's picking the Lakers, but I feel like the Warriors are finding the Lakers at the perfect time.
Okay.
The Lakers are beat up. I know they've won their past few games, but they haven't played that great of opponents the past few games.
Yes.
And they've got injuries to key guys coming off injury. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Dennis Schroeder, who we just said was going to potentially be the primary defender on Steph.
Uh-huh.
You combine that with the fact that they're still getting Andre Drummond acclimated. They're still figuring out how to play with him, with the fact that the Warriors are playing their best basketball of the season. And honestly, they've been arguably the best team in the league, at least from a net rating standpoint,
right,
over the past 20 games. And so I honestly think the Warriors are going to win tomorrow in a close game. I think that Steph's going to go off and that Juan is going to have like 7 assists and Draymond's going to have 15 assists and Andrew Wiggins is going to score 20 and 8 or post 20 and 8. And they're going to scrape out like a 5-point win. That's my prediction.
It's a hell of a prediction, and it aligns very much with our good friend Wes Goldberg's belief, which is that it's that rebounds are for suckers and assists bring about wins. That's what I'm hearing here. Wes Goldberg has infiltrated both of our basketball psyches. And
I talk with him so much that I just accidentally steal his take sometimes. So.
No. That was a very unique take. But ultimately, the foundation was set to where Wes Goldberg agrees. So if you have to blame anybody, if the Warriors lose tomorrow, blame Wes Goldberg because he's ruined everything we once knew about basketball with his hot takes. Connor, thank you so much for coming on, my friend. Very excited for tomorrow. Very excited to see what you write tomorrow. Should be a good one, as always, in the Chronicle. And thanks for coming on, my friend.
Of course, anytime.
Great stuff from Connor Letourneau there. Listen, Lakers 4.5-point, 5.5-point favorites, depending on where you're looking. Talk to your bookie. And Connor's out here saying that the Warriors are going to win by 5. And Connor's not a homer. Now, that analysis might indicate something different, but I've never taken Connor as a homer. Not one bit. He seems to think that the Warriors got the mojo going and that the Lakers, they're going to be stiff. They're not going to understand what they're doing together. Left hand won't be talking to the right hand. I think there's a lot of credence to that argument. I also think there's a lot of credence to the argument that Anthony Davis at the 5 blows up everything that the Warriors want to do. I'm taking the Lakers. I don't like it. I don't want it to be true. I want it to be a rollicking game. I'm taking the Lakers, though, because if LeBron and Anthony Davis show up, I love Draymond and Steph, but there is no answer there. There is no answer there. We will see. We will see. If it was just Connor Letourneau and Dieter Kurtenbach making predictions, this wouldn't be even half as fun. And that's given me and Connor way too much credit. Talk more Warriors and Lakers coming up here after the break. Kurtenbach is in for Willard on the Sports Leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.